Well, if you looked at your worship folder and the cover as you walked in today, you may have been tempted to say, you know, there's still enough time. We could go to another church in Bellingham if you wanted to. I wrestled with whether to put that graphic on the cover. We don't often like to come to church to hear about negative things. Certainly, we try as pastors to lead people towards positive movement forward in their lives and spiritual lives, but we cannot ignore the real parts of Scripture. And this is not a small thing in the grand scope of the narrative of the Bible. This is a huge part of the narrative. It is what I call the Dark Ages of Israel. Those weren't fun to study in history either. For those of you who enjoy history, the Dark Ages of Western Europe were a difficult time in human history. And in similar ways, we're now right in the middle of our series that we began in September and will conclude in June. And this is the low point. I can honestly say that. From the great divorce that I preached about a couple weeks ago, which was the division of Israel into northern and southern kingdoms, now we come to the end of the monarchy. This way of ruling Israel that God never wanted, but the people did, and so he gave it to them, now is coming to an end. And the decline is in all aspects of society. It is certainly spiritual, but it is also economical. It is also in the military. It is also politically. Everything is going down. And the Jewish people themselves wrongly assumed that because of God's covenant, this relationship that God made with his people going back to Adam and Noah and Abraham and David through the various, and Moses as well, through the various parts of the God's covenant, they wrongly assumed that this would protect them from their enemies. They had had dips in their life as a nation before, but now it is coming to roost, and they still are not aware of the dire straits that they are in. And so last week, we saw the writings of Jeremiah. I would include with that Lamentations, which is Jeremiah's weeping over the city of Jerusalem. And now, today, we're looking at Ezekiel, who also was one of the major prophets during this period. So the cover of the worship folder obviously depicts the destruction of Jerusalem, the most tragic and sad chapter in their history. The northern kingdom had fallen over 100 years earlier than this event, around 721 BC, and that really marked the end of 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel, because those 10 were all located and given land in the north. And so now that has been ancient history to those in the southern kingdom, but now it is falling as well. If you take the worship folder and look at the back, I included just a little bit of a timeline because this is where the Bible does give us some accurate dates that we can mark in human history. The deportation of the Jews to Babylon really consisted in 3 different military sieges by the Babylonians. Just a side note, the northern kingdom was conquered by the Assyrians. They were the superpower 100 years earlier. But now it is Babylon. And so in 3 very distinct times, Babylon comes in and begins to siege the southern kingdom. The first deportation is in 605 BC, and that's Daniel, who we will look at next week. Today, as we look at Ezekiel, he is in the second group that goes. Over 10,000 Jews were taken in 597 BC, so just about 8 years later. And then finally, about 10 years later, Jeremiah actually goes to Egypt while the final remnant is taken to Babylon. And it is at this time that Jerusalem is destroyed, the walls are torn down, and the temple itself, representing the presence of God among Israel, is leveled. And so the final deportation of the Jews to Babylon around 586. Put this in your memory banks. When you think about Ezekiel, remember that his prophecies were done from Babylon. He is in exile while God is giving him the prophecies that he gives. However, if you'd put up the first graphic, a depiction of Ezekiel here, Ezekiel's story is, he does give us a lot of dates that we don't always have in some of the prophetic literature in the scriptures. And so we can mark a lot of points within his life. He was born in 623 BC in Jerusalem to a priestly family. So he grew up becoming a priest himself. He was born under the last righteous king of the southern kingdom, who was Josiah. And if you know anything about Josiah, this is a high point. It's kind of the last one in the history of Israel. He finds the covenant, or the book of the law, in the temple as they're kind of cleaning up. And it's hard to believe, but the Jews had lost the very teachings that were at the core of the covenant. And so Josiah has this short-lived revival because he reads it in front of the people and he describes to them what God requires in the covenant, and there is a short-lived revival. But then, as I said earlier, the Babylonians come in. Josiah's successors, his sons as kings, were evil and led the country to its demise. And one little side note, it isn't really a side note, it's a huge thing. But the book of Ezekiel records that Ezekiel's own wife died in exile. She made it to Babylon, but in chapter 24, verse 18, you can read that she died. So this is a man that has faced a lot of tragedy. He is an exile himself. He's a refugee in this new land. And yet, God calls him while he is there. Put up the next graphic, if you would. This is a depiction, an artist depiction, of what we read in Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. Here, Ezekiel records, I saw that from what appeared to be his waist, this is an epiphany, or a theophany rather, that Ezekiel sees. And we'll find throughout this book that he is one who sees all kinds of visions. And this is the first one. It's his call. Remember, he's already a priest. He's in Babylon. But he is taken to this place where Yahweh sits on this throne. So he says, I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as full of fire. And that from there down, he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day. So was the radiance around him. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking. So, similar to Isaiah, if you remember the vision that Isaiah had, it's like pulling back the curtains of the spiritual realm. And throughout the Bible, we see these theophanies, these attempts by human beings to put spiritual realities into human terms. How would you describe something that you can't describe, because we don't have anything that is like that? The only way to do it is to say, it was like, it had the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day. I love that phrase. Ezekiel is simply trying to take something that is otherworldly and put it into human terms that he can understand by comparison. And so God is this divine warrior. He is on this chariot. And there are four faces. There, you may not be able to see it as clearly, but the drawing has the face of a man, a lion, an ox, and an eagle. And sometimes we get bogged down in the details of these visions, There is meaning to them at times, but other times it's just intended to say, this is beyond our ability to fully understand. It is in the heavenly realms. But here's the call to Ezekiel in chapter 2. God said, Son of man, I'm sending you to the Israelites, to a rebellious nation that's rebelled against me. They and their ancestors have been in revolt against me to this very day. The people to whom I am sending you are obstinate and stubborn. Now remember, they're already in Babylon. They are still kicking and screaming like an immature child who has been disciplined. They still have not submitted. And so God calls this prophet. Say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Whether they listen or fail to listen, they're a rebellious people. They will know that a prophet has been among them. So God calls someone who is already with them. He's experienced being torn from his own land and placed in a new land. And this is the person now who is the voice for God. The Jews in Babylon cried out, how could this happen? Is our God weaker than the Babylonian gods? Has he forgotten us? Why has he abandoned us? And again, they forgot the covenant relationship. We've been talking about these things all the way through the series. If you'd put up the first one there, the covenant relationship was first based upon God's presence, initially symbolized through the cloud and pillar of fire that Moses had as the people were led out of Egypt, later in the tabernacle. But this group of people understood what it was to have the grand and glorious Temple of Solomon. But now they're in Babylon and they hear that that temple's been destroyed. Ezekiel and his group didn't see it. It was the third group that were deported that saw that destruction. But still, they heard about it. In chapter 8 of Ezekiel, one of the other visions that he had, he was taken by God to a vision of the temple in Jerusalem. And this is what Ezekiel saw. He saw women who were weeping over the Babylonian god Tammuz, which is a god of food and vegetation. So in the holy place that only Yahweh deserved to be in, Ezekiel had a picture of how far the hearts had fallen. And they are weeping over a foreign god. And further, Ezekiel looks around, and instead of men praying towards the altar of the Holy of Holies, they have turned their back on that, and they are praying to the east. They've turned their back symbolically on Yahweh. And again, Ezekiel sees this. They had forgotten the presence of God. Secondly, they had forgotten the place that the gift of the promised land and its allocation specifically to each of the 12 tribes was part of the covenant. And they had forfeited it. They had the chance for 100 years in the southern kingdom to see the rebellion of the northern kingdom. And still, they continued down their path. The 10 tribes of the northern kingdom never again reconstituted. And the northern kingdom was gone forever. And the 2 remaining tribes in the south did not learn their lesson. And so they lose their land. And the epicenter of this promise in the covenant was Jerusalem. That's why it has such prominence in the Psalms, because they saw that Jerusalem was the center of the promise of place. And finally, the covenant was based on a people. As we've said throughout this series, God was doing a grand experiment to take one tribe and say, this is what it means to be in relationship with me, to live justly, to live in a society where I am the true king. And so they had failed to live in continual relationship with the covenant God. And instead of developing a model society that showed God's design for living, they sadly became worse than the pagan nations that surrounded them. Can you get your brain around this? This is a biblical word, apostasy, to the max. God using pagan nations to bring judgment on his people. When God's people and God's church are in darkness, he will use any means at his disposal to bring cleansing and restoration. And that's one of the lessons that we learn from seeing how he dealt with his own covenant people. Put up the next graphic, if you would. This is a depiction of one of the further visions that Ezekiel had. Again, in Babylon, among the exiles, he had him lay on one side for 390 days. The little rock there was a model of Jerusalem. And every day he goes to the city square, lays on one side for 390 days with this replica of Jerusalem next to him to show the sin of the people. And then God instructed him to do that again on the other side, flip it over, for 40 days to demonstrate Judah's sin. Ezekiel was one of these that not only had to speak the oracles of God, but he often had to demonstrate them. The next one is the one that the song we sang for our offertory, if you go to the next graphic. This is one of the many depictions that you'll find on the internet of the Valley of the Dry Bones, probably the most famous vision that Ezekiel had. And here is actually good news that Ezekiel gets to speak out of this oracle, because he is speaking that the dead house of Israel, this dispersed people who have no promise other than what they've heard from the prophets of ever coming back together again, Ezekiel says, Israel will rise again from dry bones, scattered about on a dry landscape. God will bring life again. And so the major theme of the book of Ezekiel is restoring Yahweh as sovereign among his people. It covers the details of the covenant again, of those three elements we looked at just a moment ago. But Ezekiel gets to give this promise that Yahweh is still sovereign. Even though you think the gods of the Babylonians have won, Yahweh is sovereign. The term sovereign is used 217 times in the book of Ezekiel. You cannot miss it. It is repetition. And one of the basic principles of biblical interpretation is when something is repeated, pay attention. So 217 times is a lot just for the term sovereign. But the phrase, they shall know that I am the sovereign Lord, is 70 times in Ezekiel. That phrase alone. And so Ezekiel, of all the prophets, is not speaking what he thinks. He is claiming that the sovereign God is speaking through him. Ezekiel is using the most sacred name for God that there is. As you've heard in many sermons, I'm sure, this term in the Hebrew devout Jews would not even pronounce. They would use the Hebrew word Adonai, but they would not speak the word which we translate Jehovah. That's not the word that they stayed away from. They just had consonants that represented the most holy and sacred name of God. But Ezekiel is saying, this sovereign God, this sovereign Yahweh, Adonai, identifies with God's special relationship and care for his covenant people. And so it brings the breadth of God's character. I want us to read the scripture and have you stand, if you would, at this point. The text that I'm going to read from is Ezekiel 11. And I want you to note the different places where this happens. The word of the Lord came to me. Again, Ezekiel is not talking his ideas. Son of man, the people.